Shabbat Shalom, everyone. It's such a joy to be here together. Drunmay Davis tells a powerful story. She was 9 years old. At the time, she developed this habit of biting her nails until they were raw, sometimes until they were bleeding. And she has a teacher that says to her, in all seriousness, "Drunmay, if you keep biting your nails, one day you're going to meet a boy, and you're going to want him to date you, and he's going to be holding your hand, and will look down and see how disgusting your hands are, and he's not going to want to date you." Even at 9, Drunmay knew there was something very wrong with that picture. How could it be that this teacher couldn't see the pain she was holding? Pain that was causing her to bite her nails until they bled. How could it be that at age 9, she's getting the message that her relationship to her body should be predicated on the perception of some future partner? As if the value of her body lay in how somebody else would enjoy it. Perhaps that's what sparked her determination to begin a journey of activism. As a teenager, she became a very well-known influencer, posting pictures of herself, modeling her beautiful curves, unfiltered pictures with racy captions like "fat belly, saggy Sunday" and "a flat stomach won't change your life," and "it's so exhausting being afraid and ashamed of parts of your body." She railed against fatphobia and encouraged people everywhere to take pride in their appearance, to celebrate their body for every curve and every roll. As one follower, Tiana James, shared recently with the New York Times, "I wanted to feel comfortable in my body, and she was like me in so many ways. So it made it easier to be myself. If I could find this person so beautiful, and she was bigger, I could find myself beautiful too." Drunmay claimed her power and her beauty. And in doing so, she inspired thousands of people across the country. She helped to create a corner of the internet that became known as the body positivity community, a place where real beauty of all shapes and sizes was valued, a place where inner happiness and self-confidence was prioritized, a place where people didn't have to worry so much about what other people were thinking or saying, where people instead focused on their own sense of inner satisfaction, happiness, and contentment within themselves. But then something shifted. Drunmay began losing weight, a lot of weight. She kept posting pictures, increasingly angular, skinny shots of herself, without those captions she had become famous for. As she shared with the New York Times, "Part of me was embarrassed and felt really guilty. All I ever wanted to do on the internet was make women feel okay about themselves." Her followers turned on her, hurt and upset by her physical changes. They interpreted her rapid weight loss as a capitulation to the patriarchy, a betrayal to the movement she had helped to found. What they did not know and could not guess was that Dranmei was struggling, increasingly consumed by painful emotions. She had relapsed to disordered eating. Once again, Drunmei's pain was visible, and yet totally unseen. What a tragic irony that a community that purports to be a body positivity movement turns out to only be a particular kind of body positivity movement. As if you only need body positivity if your body defies societal expectations. As if you're tall or blonde or skinny, or if you have hair in the right places growing in the right way, you don't need body positivity because you'll get enough compliments from the outside to fuel you. That's ludicrous. All of us, no matter how big or how small, no matter how old or how young, all of us at various times struggle with loving and accepting our body for what it looks like, for how it functions and how it is. So much of our world is built on capitalizing on this insecurity. Just walk down the cosmetics aisle in the grocery store. You'll see hundreds of products. This one defies aging. This one's anti-wrinkle. This one covers any blemish. Check out this product. It'll help you to fit in any garment you want without any rules. This covers any gray. All of these products communicate that we're not okay as we are. That you've got to work to be loved and accepted. And that acceptance and that love is predicated on conformity with some external social ideal. And then there's the feedback. Wes likes to say people are so generous with feedback. I'm constantly surprised by all the feedback I get about my body, about how big I am or how small I am, about how I look or don't look at all pregnant, about how quickly I bounced back or about it's really hard to bounce back, isn't it? And I know these comments are given in such love. They're given to me because people want me to feel good about myself. They want me to know they see me. And yet, every time someone makes a comment about my body, I feel myself shrinking. It makes me feel uncomfortable because on a subconscious level, it raises that idea that's just hovering around, that as a woman, my only value is in how I appear. And if I ever want to be taken seriously, if I ever want to be loved or appreciated, I have to conform, I have to look a certain way. We need a body positivity movement. I need a body positivity movement. And I'm not just talking about a body positivity movement that helps you to look in the mirror and say, wow, I'm looking great. I'm not just talking about a body positivity movement that helps you to rock those pimples or those blemishes, that helps you embrace the rolls or the bloating or the stretch marks or the receding hairline. I mean, we need that. That's true. But we need a body positivity movement that's more than that. We need a spiritual practice of body positivity. I want to tell you a story. Our rabbis teach that until Abraham, there was no old age. There was no aging, in fact. You were born, and your body grew until you were about 18. And then it froze in time. No wrinkles, no graying hair, No stretch marks, no health challenges, no pimples. Your body would be perfect. Imagine being 87 with the body of an 18-year-old. People were always strong and always capable and always beautiful. There was just one small problem. It was a little hard to tell people apart. Abraham felt this acutely. People would go looking for him to have a conversation with him and would instead find his son Isaac. Or they go looking for Isaac and want to have a conversation with him but would instead find Abraham. And he became so troubled by this that he went to God and begged God for a miracle. "Please, God," he said, "give me some physical marker, some indication so people know who I am." Now, God loved Abraham. And so God listened to his prayer and gave him the blessing of aging. And by the way, Abraham was grateful. As the text says, Avraham zaken b'avyamim v'adonai berach et Avraham b'kol. Abraham was old and stricken with age, and God blessed him with everything. Age wasn't just something that Abraham yearned for because he wanted to be different. In his time, age was a symbol of wisdom, of rich life experience. And he wasn't the only one that craved it. There's another famous story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, who was brilliant, so smart that he was picked to appoint to head the academy at just 18. And when he was selected, he was so afraid that people wouldn't take him seriously, that they wouldn't be able to see the content of his characters behind his young face, that God too gave him the blessing of a different exterior. That night, as he went to sleep, his hair changed and became pure white, giving him the face of a 70-year-old, and suddenly people could see what he had to offer and not just his young age. For both Abraham and Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, they wanted a physical body that could share some of the life experiences they'd had. They didn't want just perfection, they wanted to be seen for the lives they'd lived, and they didn't love their bodies despite their imperfections. They loved their bodies because of them. We need this spiritual medicine so badly today. We need a spiritual practice of body positivity that enables us to love every hair no matter where it grows, that enables us to love every wrinkle, that enables us to look in the mirror at the stretch marks and the bloating and the scars and the pimples and say, "Wow, you're looking good." We need a body positivity that allows us to stand up and say, "Hey, not cool," when somebody makes a comment. We need a body positivity that allows us to stand against ageism and sexism and racism and all the isms. More than that, we need a body positivity that allows us to get beyond our bodies, that helps us to focus on what's inside. Because the bottom line is our bodies are the least interesting part of us. And the more we focus on the exterior, the more we miss out on what really matters. Now, this is a personal practice, that's true. All of us have work to do to love ourselves, and it's important. But body positivity is essentially also a community practice. It's a practice we have to reaffirm and affirm for each other. We do that in a couple of simple ways. One, we just don't talk about bodies. Talk about what you're reading or what you're thinking. We talk about what you're doing or what you're experiencing. We talk about the world around us and the world inside. And we focus on all that we love. We build a practice of gratitude. Canadian poet Rupi Kaur shares in a powerful poem. From now on, I will say things to you like, you are resilient, or you are extraordinary. Not because I don't think you're pretty, but because you are so much more than that. Let's be positive about it. Please rise, page 184.